welcome to Cocoon Break Book Week podcast with myself, Chris Walker, and Jerry Hassan.
Good afternoon, or morning, or evening.
Time of the day you're listening, we have the lovely Karen Campbell with us today, who is going to be talking about a series of her books, the latest one being Paper Cup, when she appears at Cocoon Break Book Week at Broughton House on Saturday the 9th of March at 7 p.m. And we're looking forward to that hugely. It's supported by the Scottish Book Trust through its live literature programme. Karen, good afternoon.
Hello, it's nice to see you both.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
welcome to our little cosy podcast where the three of us just chat from everything about your book and early life. And that's really where I want to start, because you're now living here in Gatehouse-of-Fleet in Dumfries and Galloway. But can we revisit an earlier life in the police?
Yeah, I mean, I'm from Glasgow originally, so I've coined the term Galloweegee.
Oh,
so
nice.
I live in Galloway now, but I've still got a bit of Ouija in me. Yeah, and I was a police officer in Glasgow. That was my first sort of main job. Before that, I did English at university. So I've always said when I talk about it, because you see people do a double take. She used to be a police, and now she writes books. And like, there's a sort of sense of, can they write police? I don't know. Can they spell? But I love books. I love literature. When I was a kid, you know, it was just like a portal to so many different worlds. So I studied English at university because I liked books, and I had not really any idea beyond that what I wanted to do. But I found by the end of university, I was scunnered with books. It was like the joy had gone out of it. You know, studying something that you love just dilutes the magic. So,
it's like listening to an LP
too. The thing you love, you kind of smother it almost. So I graduated one Tuesday and joined Strathclyde Police the next, which maybe seems like an odd thing. And yes, it was one of those things, you know, marry in haste, repent at leisure. But my dad was a police officer and my mum had been a cop as well. So
it was in the blood.
Well, yeah. And it was one of those things too, if you don't know what you want to be, sometimes you reach out for something that seems familiar and comfortable. And also I knew it was a sort of job where no 2 days are the same. So for someone that didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I kind of wanted to do something practical rather than cerebral because of my experience of just thinking, I've been in my head too much, you know, studying books. So yeah, I joined the police and then very quickly thought, this isn't the job for me.
How many years were you in the police?
I was in for about 5.5 years. Yeah. So I met my husband. He's a cop.
You met him on day one of training, didn't you?
We joined
right?
on the same day, yes. Our romance blossomed at Tully Allen.
So you're a quick decider about some things.
Well, we're on residential training for 8 weeks. So it was over that period that, we decided.
And so how long were you in the police that you're thinking, this is what, you're obviously still thinking of yourself as a writer, but how long were you thinking, this is really not for me, or I want to continue the writing sort of exploration?
Well, I had never really thought of myself as a writer before, to be honest, Jerry. It was, you know, I loved books, I loved writing, but it seemed like one of those, I also wanted to be an actress. You know, it was one of those sort of pipe dreams that people like me don't do that. But I had always written, I think, just as my way of processing the world, writing wee stories, snippets of stuff, without any idea of what to do with it. I didn't really do that when I was in the police because shift work just turned our life upside down. Mm. My husband and I were on different shifts for quite a long period, so you know your days off weren't the same, and it's like a bit like being in a tumble dryer or something, just getting spun around, you know. And I enjoyed the work. I did enjoy being a police officer, but I always felt a bit of a fraud. I always thought they're going to catch me at some point. You know, you can be book smart but not have common sense, and I could literally walk past crimes happening and probably did on occasion. You know, I was good at sort of presentational stuff. I was in community involvement, did a lot of stuff about personal safety for women. I love that. Schools talks, crime prevention, all of that stuff. But ask me to spot a Ned at five paces and I'm more likely trip over my own shoelaces, you know. So I was that kind of a cop. Typical sort of, you know, I was never a graduate entrant in that I was on a fast track, but I was a walking example for why I don't think that's a good idea, because you need to learn common sense on the street. So it was after I'd left the police.
Is that still, are you still in your 20s when you left the police?
Yes, because when my first daughter was born, so I would have been 26 then. And I found I started to write again then, and it was my way of remembering what I used to do, because even though I was glad to get out, it was like, phew, I got out of that before they discovered that I shouldn't have been in it in the first place. But it was one of those jobs that it's a big chunk of your identity. When you say you're a police officer, folk look at you in a different way. It can be good or it can be bad, you know, but there's a sense of stature about that job. And then you're a mum at home with two wee ones eventually, and, you know, sort of crying into the nappies thinking, I used to do something. Not that motherhood's not important, but I started writing wee short stories and just bits and pieces, some about the police, some about other things, but I ended up developing a portfolio of snippets of short stories and stuff. Again, me processing the thing that I wasn't anymore, remembering things that I had done, just kind of working things out. And then when my second daughter was two maybe or three, I saw an article in the Herald, and it was an interview with Anne Donovan, who's a really good Scottish writer. And it was about her, I think she'd won the Orange, or she'd been shortlisted for the Orange Prize for fiction, but she was talking about doing a postgraduate at Glasgow Uni in creative writing. And I was like, oh, I didn't know you could do that. So I applied for that with all these bits and pieces that I had, and that was my portfolio. So I went back to my alma mater when I was 30, and I did 2 years postgraduate in creative fiction, which was incredible. It was just with people like Alistair Gray, he was one of the professors, Jim Kelman, Liz Lockhead, Janice Galloway, Willie Maley, who was my professor.
Was that the Glasgow course you did on the Strathclyde course?
Well, it was actually, it was the very last year that it was a joint one. Strathclyde and Glasgow offered it jointly. So, and I was working in Glasgow City Council at that time as a press officer. So I'd gone back to work. I was part-time then. So it meant that I could work, have the kids at nursery or whatever, and then go to classes in the evening. But sometimes you would be getting out of the city chambers, jumping on the subway to go up to Hillhead for a lecture, and then you'd have a tutorial back at Strathclyde. So in the second year, I think it was just Glasgow, I think they separated it then, which made it a wee bit easier to to manage. But it was just an amazing experience. It was what I imagined being at art school would be like, that you just get time and space and creative juices to mess about and kind of find out what kind of artist you want to be.
As you know, that's one of the great courses, the Glasgow's Stroke Strathclyde course, that's produced so much talent, such a whole generation. And so you've done eight novels, haven't you?
I've actually finished nine, but I've got eight published, yes.
And you started with The Twilight Time, your first novel?
That was the first one, yeah.
And was that based partly on police experience, your
Yeah, I mean, it was a short story I had written, and I was very reluctant at first to write about the police, because I didn't want to write crime fiction. I didn't, you know, a lot of cops don't read crime fiction. It's like, it's a bit of a busman's holiday in a way. And also, you end up always seeing flaws, things that, well, that wouldn't happen, and that's not legally appropriate or whatever. So it wasn't a genre I was familiar with. But this short story was about a cop, a young cop, policing an orange walk in Glasgow. And there was various elements in it about bullying and things like that and not fitting in. But the main thrust of it was, which was based on truth, he was trying not to march in time with the sound of the drums beating, because it was a 16 march. And you find that you're caught up in the music, and before you know it, you're kind of swinging along in time to the music. So that was the kind of gist of that story. And it got a really good reception in a workshop at university. And my tutor said, why don't you write more things like that? You can still write about the police, but it doesn't have to be the sort of car chasey thing you don't want to do. You've got a unique insight into what life is like in uniform.
That's the intoxication of hate you're talking about. I mean, if you've lived in Glasgow, as I have, you experienced that, you know, in many ways.
And that was something I started to explore in The Twilight Time. I mean, there is obviously crime in it, because, you know, it's the police, so it'd be a very dull day if there wasn't. But I wanted to look at uniform cops, and I wanted to look at exactly that, that, you know, you go out into the world with a uniform on, and you're a barrage for abuse, you know, not a barrage, a receptacle for abuse. You are, you're very visible. You have people older than your parents asking you for advice. You are the font of all knowledge. You are the bogeyman that people say that he'll come and take you away if you're not good. You'd have to jump in the Clyde if somebody fell in. You know, you have to know the directions to Auchinshuggle. It's just, it was that all-encompassing fear of having to know about everything, and you might get something wrong, and the buck stops with you. So that was what I began writing about, and there's a lot of that in The Twilight Time.
That's great. And you've done obviously a series of crime novels, and then you've expanded out to a much wider canvas.
Yeah, Well, I just tell you, they weren't crime novels, Jerry. but I always, any interview you'll see that I've done, I always said, to me, they're just about people that happen to be police. I was very character-led, and I wanted to try and show the variety of different types of folk in the police and the different types of work that you do. So when I moved from that to start writing, like my first book after the four police books was This Is Where I Am, which is about a Somali refugee living in Glasgow. And, you know, interviews and things at the time were like, oh, that's a huge jump. And why, you know, what a turnaround. And, and I maintain, I don't think it was that much different. It's about lots of lives in a city living cheap by jowl, and the sort of perceptions, what you see on the surface is not what the real person is. So it's,
it's, did that come from befriending a Somali refugee?
Well, my husband actually, who'd it was just before we moved down here, actually, he had retired from the police early, and he was working with the Scottish Refugee Council. So he actually did mentor a lovely Somali chap, and we got to know his family. But my husband was also working as a volunteer on a sort of, you know, face-to-face element of the Refugee Council, so like a one-stop shop dealing with people as they came and looking for all sorts of help. So he was just coming home at night with different stories that absolutely made my blood boil. And I think I often do write from a position of maybe not anger, but outrage, you know. So this, you know, I want to almost memorialise it and capture it, but also, and I need to watch this, I know, and my editor said that before, get off your soapbox, Campbell, you know, that a book is about entertaining, you can't use it as your personal megaphone. But those sort of things, you know, sort of sense of injustice or social unfairness or hierarchies, they definitely motivate me to want
resonate
to just
with you as a
author. Definitely.
Can I go back to the university though, because you mentioned something there, you said creative juices, and we actually just were speaking to Linda Wheatley before this podcast, and we had exactly the same moment of her talking about creative juices. Now hers came from going abroad, finding a happy place, really, finding somewhere where she could empty her brain from, she was a mental health nurse, so take everything out of her brain and then start to let other ideas in, let other thoughts come in, let other stories come in. When you were at university, you had that break and you had that 2 years' time, you said it allowed you to get your creative juices. Were you then thinking about two or three books down the line where you started to think of, I'm here to study and I'm going to now make a career of being an author?
I don't think initially I did, no, because it still felt very fanciful. But what doing that course did do absolutely was, being in the company of other writers, it normalised it. It made it not, you know, there's a real mix, I think, when you're a writer, of being, you're quite insular and deep, and you want to take your time and work things out, and also quite arrogant, because you're like, here, this was in my head, I wrote it, look at it, you know, you're sort of forcing your inner thoughts on people. And also it just seems like who'd want to know that. So being with other writers and also being taught by other more established writers, it just made it not, it wasn't something ridiculous, it was something that was plausible to do as a career. But also they sort of talked about the steps to do it, and publishers and agents and things came into the course as well, and kind of talked about their element of the business too. So that demystified it, but it was more just being in this melting pot of creativity and sparking off other people and learning other ways of processing how you write, because everybody writes in a different way. And I think the main thing for me was learning that it's okay just to jump in. You know, most writing that you do before doing anything creative is very linear. You know, if you're doing report writing or a letter or something, it's beginning, middle and end. Even in school, you're kind of taught that with a story. But being surrounded by writers of the caliber that were on that course, and there was never a big lecture about this is how you write a novel, it was just them talking about their process. It was always that sense of, just begin with something. Don't worry too much about what it is. Don't worry about where it's going. But just go for it. Whatever the scalp under your skin is, explore it, write around it, see what it takes you. So doing that began to make it more plausible that you don't just need one idea. And if other ideas spill out, you don't have to shove them all into one book, because this is an ongoing process that you can hopefully build on.
So would you have Would you, we've talked to lots of authors over the years, do you sort of think, right, that's for another book? And do you sort of have four or five just sitting there in the background thinking, I'm going to go to those on another day and expand on that?
Never, no. I always have a really scary moment towards the end of a book thinking, well, maybe that's the well dry and I'm done. And sometimes
really?
It is. Sometimes really? It will be a year before I get an idea. Other times there's something almost subliminal that I don't even know I'm getting to the end of the book, and it's like there's space in my head and my wee antenna go boo, and you start to gravitate towards something else that's just forming in the background. But no, I don't have like a list of ideas or storylines or anything like that at all. I've got a friend who's a great screenwriter and a novelist as well, and she can flip between different books and have different things, and she writes for young adults as well. I can't do that. I need to be all or nothing in the one. And then when I come up for air, I'll start thinking about what the next one is. And yes, sometimes there's nothing there. And then eventually
that's a scary moment.
This sort of weird mist starts to form and a shape comes out. And you think, okay, I'll go with that.
Because you've written on, I mean, in the last, like, what, 10 years, you wrote a book post-Scotland and the independence referendum. Mm-hmm. You wrote a book about Italy, or Italy in the middle of, you know, the strange...
World War II.
Yeah, when Italy went from being on the side of the Germans to being on the side of the Allies and so on. And what drew you to, for instance, that as a subject? That's a fascinating, like, really complex subject about relationships then.
Yeah, that was called The Sound of the Hours. That's the only historical book I've done, although another one's kind of nibbling at me that I might do. But I always said after the Italian one, I'm never writing history again, because it took me 4 years.
It's a big, complex subject
because,
to the canvas.
Yeah, and again, it was just this wee hook under my skin. I was there on holiday, this part of Italy called Barga, which is the most Scottish town in Italy. They have that on the road sign as you go in. There's a lot of cross transference. The Rinaldi family, who've got cafes in Dumfries,
yeah.
Giancarlo Rinaldi, the local reporter,
yeah, yeah.
His family's from Barga.
Yeah.
Our friend Sergio Casci, who's a screenwriter, his family are from Barga. Paolo Nutini, his family are from Barga.
Yeah.
Daniela Nardini, the actress, her family are from Barga. So there's a really strong crossover, and we were there on holiday, and I won't go into the details of the story, but basically it was a war memorial there, and I was hooked by the story about the battle that this memorial represented, and I just thought, I want to write about that. And I kind of, you know when you start something and you don't know what you need to know, so you start to learn everything. So that's why it took me 4 years, because I did so much research about the war in Italy, because I was thinking, what side was Italy on?
Yeah.
Turns out they were on both sides, that's why I wasn't sure. But trying to get all of that nuance and complexity into a novel, I honestly thought I wouldn't ever write anything again, because it just...
And the idea came from being on holiday.
Yeah.
Did you have to go out and revisit it?
Oh yeah,
several
I had to go to Italy several times.
Yeah, yeah.
I got a grant from the Creative Scotland to go to Italy. It was an ordeal, but I felt for my art I had to suffer. But yeah, I mean I did. I learned a bit of Italian. Because there was some, you know, like the local Monsignor, the sort of minister of the Duomo, he had kept a diary and it had been published, but in Italian only. So I had to try and translate bits of that, because it was brilliant for the detail of day-to-day life. So yeah, it was a real undertaking. But then the next book I wrote, which is Paper Cup,
what we're talking about?
That took me 3 months.
Really?
For the first draft, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like such a different process.
And I know this is like a mundane, but in terms of just like, you know, writing books as well, how many words is that to do in 3 months?
Paper Cup, I think, was about 90,000.
So that's quite an impressive daily rate of. Are you
yeah.
Are you averaging?
No. It was like a miracle, that book. No. I mean, I can maybe do 500 words a day on a good day.
Right. Are you sitting in a special place?
I have a special place, but I don't always use it. But I found certainly when we first moved down from Glasgow, I think you have this idea, you move to the country for inspiration, but I found everything slowed down, and actually it was like I was on holiday, it was lovely, I was having a great me time, but I thought it really should work. So I got myself a nice old roll top desk, and I've got a wee study up the stairs, and the act of kind of going there and sitting at that place, it was like going into an office. It made me start to focus again and think, this is work, this is what your job is. So I sat there. But yeah, with Paper Cup, it was just, I think partly because it takes so long to write the Italian novel, I almost needed a breath of fresh air in the way I wrote to make me excited about writing again, because it honestly floored me, the Italian one.
The Italian job floored you, in a sense. Yes,
it did, yes.
And so tell us about Paper Cup. And obviously there's the central protagonist, Kelly, but there's quite a lot going on in this book. It's a Galwegian book, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah. Most of it is set in Galloway, round about. There's bits in Kirkcudbright, there's bits in Whithorn, there's bits in Gatehouse, places like St Ninian's Cave. So part of it was a kind of once a love letter to Galloway. There's not a huge amount of fiction that's come out of here, and I just wanted to kind of pin it to the map a wee bit. And it's where I live now, you know, and most of my books have been set in Glasgow, so it felt right. It begins in Glasgow, certainly, this book. But the story is about a woman who, at the start of the book, she's homeless on the streets of Glasgow, and this thing happens that basically makes her want to flee the city, and she, by a variety of routes, hitchhiking and walking and things, she ends up down in Portpatrick to begin with. And we start to learn in flashback as she starts to make the journey home to the wee town that she left all those years ago. We learn in flashback how she became homeless in the first place. So it's a kind of pilgrimage, bit meandering novel, but you get these wee sharp, and actually the closer she gets home, it's like her memories are getting stronger, things that she's buried, so those flashbacks become more intense.
And other towns, I haven't, Karen, by the way, I haven't bought it, but I haven't read it yet. Are the towns in Galloway named as they are?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is it difficult as a writer, a fiction writer, to sometimes run a fact parallel with a fiction parallel? So you talk about Portpatrick, you talk about Adelaide, but then you're going to put a fictional character into it, and I find that fascinating from writers, how they manage to do that. Do you understand?
Yeah, I think it depends what you're writing. So because this was a kind of road trip stroke pilgrimage thing, I absolutely wanted to, you know, she sort of loosely follows sort of St Ninian's pilgrimage path type thing, but you know, I kind of made up bits. I don't mean made up places, just where I wanted her to go. Like, she goes to Wigton Book Festival, which I don't think St Ninian ever visited, but I wanted to highlight the Wigton Book Festival. But I have set that novel Rise, the one that was about the independence referendum. It was set in Kilmartin in Argyllshire, but I changed the name of it because it was such a small place. I mean, like, just, you know, a hamlet. There's only one pub there, and I just thought, if you say something that might offend somebody, or I don't know, and I also wanted to change a bit of the geography of the place too, so I felt okay doing that, even though I use all the beautiful stuff about Kilmartin Glen, you know, with the standing stones and the burial cairns and stuff, because that was such an inspiring landscape, but I felt I had to change the name of it and bits and pieces. But here, no, it felt really important to make it as precise as possible, because I do hope, and you know, it's had a good response down south as well, so I hope people actually pick it up and want to come here.
Well, I think you're probably talking a lot more about that. I don't want to spoil everybody's trip to come and see Karen at Broughton House at the evening they're having, because I'm sure Paper Cup will be one of the main discussions. But you just touched on something before, that you said there's something else in the pipeline now. Is this a new novel, or is it a factual historical novel that's coming out next?
No, it's a new novel that I'm just about to start editing, so it is finished, but my editor just sent me her notes yesterday, so
kind of great feeling.
No, I looked at the email and thought, I'm not even going to open it. I'll wait till Monday.
Is that a whole novel of notes with notes on it?
Aye, yeah.
Wow.
And a wee letter covering it, so I've had a wee peek at the letter. So it's a great feeling when you finish it and get it off your desk, but then it comes back with editing.
3 months.
Yeah.
This
About a year and a half. And then the editing process will begin now. So it's about a wee boy living in Denison in Glasgow, back to Glasgow again. And he basically, he's kind of on the cusp of a lot of things. He's just about to turn 12. He's a bit in trouble with the police. He could go sort of one way or the other. And I wanted to write about how, you know, one wee event can trigger another, and about the people that are there to support him, or the people that make his life more difficult, and just the different pathways and routes that he might take.
The wrong path,
exactly.
The right one.
Yeah, and then I'm beginning to think about another maybe historical one, but it's just like it's in the mist stage at the moment, so I don't know about
and
that
is
yet.
Is there time as an author now? This will be the ninth novel that you're just about to edit.
Yeah.
Will you go? I'm actually going to have a break now for a year. Or do you not think like that? Do you not think?
Well, I think
defrag.
Yeah, with the first four books, the police books, it was one a year they wanted. That was quite a turnaround, and I couldn't sustain that. But I'm with a different publisher now, and it's much more just whenever you're ready sort of thing. So I absolutely wouldn't force something. If it doesn't come, then that's fine. You know, this novel that's getting edited just now, it should be out next spring or maybe May next year. So... you know, I've got time to begin thinking, but it might be another couple of years after that before another one is finished. And yeah, there might just come a point where I think, you know, if I do another one, that would be 10, and 10 feels like a nice round number. But then I don't know, because something else might just start scratching away at me.
Because you've then got a lineage, you know, that I don't think ever, I don't know you, but I don't think authors so much, but I do think about, say, musical artists like that, like the Beatles did 13 albums or Sinatra did 20 in the 50s. But it's like, see, Archie McPherson said to me yesterday, he's coming to Book Week next year, he said to me, my 11th book will just be finished and out then. So I was thinking, he's quite old, Archie, but he's thinking in numbers about his books. You know, I just thought it was quite interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, again, different. I know with Ian Rankin, I did an event with him, and you know, he's got his year mapped out, like the however many months he's going to write, then the sort of tour, the publicity, and that is every year, and that's how it works for him. But I just found when I did the four police books like that, I think by the fourth one I had nothing left to say. I just felt spent, and I couldn't. The well was definitely empty, and I just didn't want to, because it was the same characters sort of at different stages of their careers in those four books. I didn't want to ever see them again.
Was that a good feel? Because we were just talking in the earlier discussion about grief and loss and the positives of that, because it's just elemental toy. That sounds a wee bit scary, but also there could be a real positive. Was that a liberation leaving that?
Yeah, it was. It definitely was. And, you know, if you ever do read those four books, then I make it in the fourth book. Like, I'm definitely not going back. You know, it's like... I'm not a great one for tying up every loose end, but with that, I did. It was like, I'm tying you up, I'm putting you in a box, and I'm putting nails in you. That's it, you're done.
I do think the art, it's a George Harrison phrase, I think the art of dying is a really profound thing to do in life. You know, let things die.
Yeah. But I have to say, with Kelly, the character in Paper Cup, I've really missed her more than any other character.
Because she is very powerful, her inner voice and world.
Yeah, and she kind of arrived fully formed in a way that most characters don't. You know, it's like she was having a conversation with me and nudging me.
That's what comes across.
Yeah, and it was, I really missed her voice. And I think about it, I wonder what she's doing. And then it sounds ridiculous because I made her. And I'm probably never going to write about her again, but... Yeah, for it was like a very intense 3 months. I mean, that, you know, it was the first draft, and then obviously it took longer to fine tune it and things. But it was like I had her, I was sort of inhabiting her for that time. So I did miss her more than I have with other books. I felt that's the end of the story, and I'm done with it. But I didn't feel that with Kelly.
I'm looking forward to reading it because I'm taking it on my holiday. We went to Barbados on a cruise ship, so I've got your book and Naomi Johnson's book to read. 15,
lovely.
Around the world in 15 mile per hour ish. different books. So I shall report back when I return.
Well, it might make you homesick.
Yeah, it might do actually. But Karen, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a delight to talk to you. And anybody who's wanting to come and see Karen, she's at Broughton House on March the 9th at 7 p.m. Talking about obviously Paper Cup, and we haven't even touched on, but I know you will on the evening talk about your residency, writing residency in Dumfries and Galloway during the COVID times. I'm sure that'll come out. Plenty more for you to hear from Karen if you can come along to Kirkcudbright Book Week, Saturday 9th of March, 7 p.m. Karen Campbell, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.